The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Brandon Tatum is a 7-year veteran of the Tucson Police Department. He's a YouTube sensation with 1.9 million subscribers. He started Blexit with Candace Owens, and now he's tackling his biggest assignment yet. This is the Officer Tatum Show.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Officer Tatum Show. I'm your host, Brandon Tatum. I have some tragic news. I know that you probably heard about it, but there was a tragic shooting in Uvalde, Texas. 15 dead. 14 of them were children shot at an elementary school in a small town called Uvalde. Population about 15,000 people. 78% population is Hispanic. And I saw the picture of the shooter, and he looks like he's Hispanic. He looked deranged. He looks like he's a menace to society. How did nobody detect that he was nutty? It's beyond me. On his social media, Instagram, he posted magazines. He posted rifles. He seems like he was a deranged young man. And before the shooting at the school, at the elementary school, which he did not attend, he was 18 years old, he murdered his grandmother. And after murdering his grandmother, he went to the school and shot as many kids as he could. Right now, it doesn't appear that there's a clear motive other than him being insane. And it's a very tragic situation, and my condolences and prayers go out to the families that have lost their loved ones in such a tragic event. I am getting sick and tired of being sick and tired of seeing these things happen in our country. This is unacceptable, and these things should not be happening at the frequency in which we see them happening. What I will say is that this is not a gun control thing. And all the leftists are out here crying. They cannot wait to battle political jargon on the dead bodies of children to push their political motives of gun control. Let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. If a person does not care about going to prison for life regarding murder, they couldn't care less about a gun charge. 99.9% of people, and that's a number that I'm making up. I mean, I don't have the statistical data, but this is just based on my observation. I believe that around 99.9% of people who own AR-15s, who own guns, are not out killing people unjustifiably. Why do you come to that conclusion, Mr. Tatum? Because there's hundreds of millions of guns, and we see these situations occurring, but they're not occurring at the frequency in which people are owning firearms. What's the solution to the problem? Because we know that there's a problem. If you are a parent and you have your children in school, you have fears of a student or a deranged person with motives coming and shooting up the school and potentially killing your children. You have that fear. The solution to the problem, in my opinion, is not gun reform and all this so crazy stuff that the left is trying to do. The solution to the problem is allowing teachers, support a part of a solution. I'm going to give multiple solutions here. One of the parts in the solution is to allow teachers who want to be armed in the schools. If you trust them with your kids anyway, they already out here, some of them out here raping kids. So if you trust them, you should have a level of trust and vetting that goes on in the school system. That if you trust them to protect your children, to not molest and abuse your children, then you should trust them to be able to carry a firearm responsibly and protect your children in situations like this. They can go to get training just like anybody else. They can go and get firearms training. They may have to have a qualification that they have to go through. Can be put on by the local police department. If you are qualified, you have training in gun retention, you have training in use of force de-escalation, tactics. You know the law. You could take them through the course of action in case of an emergency situation. How would they respond? You could train them on all of it. Give them the opportunity to carry a gun at school so they can protect themselves and they can protect the children that are there. I would argue that many teachers in the state of Texas and all over the country that already own firearms in their own personal life would love to be able to be in a position to protect their children in case a nut job goes to the school and attempts to kill people. And unlike the left, we should not have the defund the police movement and being so woke that you remove the police officers from the schools. We should have law enforcement officers in the school. Taxpayers are already paying for this. Have them in the school with an AR-15 and body armor. So just in case a young man loses his mind and want to go shoot up a school, you have at least somebody there to combat that deadly threat. These are solutions. Shut the school down. No way in, no way out unless you come through the front doors. Have them locked and secured. It's not that difficult. And in some jurisdictions, if you feel like that there's a problem with children bringing guns to school, have metal detectors. You can spend money on LGBTQ++ and who is gender neutral and all this old crazy stuff that they do in the school system. They can use taxpayer dollars for that, but they can't put metal detectors in the schools. Okay. I think that it's very clear, ladies and gentlemen, that we need to take proactive measures to mitigate some of these things. Now, in the grand scheme of things, is it conducive for every person that has a child in school or every person that goes to a grocery store or goes on a subway train to be in imminent fear that somebody's going to gun you down? It's probably not a legitimate fear. When you look at the amount of shootings that occur, there's millions of schools in the state of Texas, probably. And this is one shooting. It's rare when you look at the number of occurrences and you look at the population in the state of Texas. You look at the amount of schools across the nation. There's 300 plus million people in the United States of America, several million schools. And we see these things popping up, although the news put it in the forefront and they'll talk about every situation like this. This is very rare in the grand scheme of things of happening. However, if it's your baby at a school, rarity does not matter. The fact that your child has lost their lives or in potential danger because the inadequacies of the school system in some respects, you're going to feel the pain. I do not think that we should politicize things like this. The people in power should take a step back and say, look, let's put our political agenda aside. What are real solutions to the problems? What are real solutions? And I'll repeat this one more time because I think it's invaluable for people to understand, is that gun control is not the solution, ladies and gentlemen. Ask yourself, what does that even mean? Do the United States government plan to take every single AR-15 off of the streets and out of the homes of the United States citizens? There's hundreds of millions of rifles in this country that people own. I already said it before, over 99%+ of people are doing the right things. Guns don't just jump out of your closet, jump out of the safe, jump up under the bed, take itself off safety and run down the street and shoot up people. That does not happen. Guns controlled by lunatics are a problem. Guns in and of themselves are not the problem. If you want to make an argument to say, yes, guns are the problem, well, then alcohol is the problem as well. Drugs are problems as well. So every single bottle of vodka should be banned from the United States of America. No, that's not legitimate because most people that drink alcohol are not abusing alcohol. Most people that drive in motor vehicles, which there's motor vehicle accidents, fatalities every day. There's been a few up the street from where I live. Does that mean you have to ban every single motor vehicle in the United States of America? No, because most people are responsible drivers. We can easily mitigate the people who are not responsible drivers, who are not responsible drinkers, who are not responsible with firearms. And I don't think limiting people's rights are going to get us to the solution that we want to see. Because criminals are going to always have guns. Do you want to live in a nation where only the bad guys are armed and dangerous? We've already seen across the country that crime has gone out of control because of the lack of police response, because of the lack of police officers in numbers, because of the degradation of the morale of police departments around the country. Do you want to live in a nation where criminals are running out of control and you have to put your hands up and pray to God that somebody don't gun you down or ransack your house, force entry, do a home invasion in your house? Do you want to live in that country? I know I don't. So we need to stand up for our rights to keep and bear arms. But there's measures in place that we can use to prevent these things from happening. You're listening to The Officer Tatum Show. Call in after the break. I'll give you the number in a second. Hold the phone.
The Officer Tatum Show. 844-900-7243. That's 844-900-7243.
Ladies and gentlemen, yours truly in MyPillow are offering a buy one, get one extravaganza on multiple MyPillow products. Now's the time to join millions of Americans who have changed the quality of their sleep with MyPillow. Right now, buy one, get one free pricing on MyPillow bed sheets, Giza Elegance MyPillows, six-piece towel sets, and roll and go anywhere MyPillows. Just go to the radio listener specials page at MyPillow.com and use promo code Tatum or call 800-976-8379. Don't miss this incredible opportunity to buy one, get one free on select items. You will also receive Mike's book absolutely free with any purchase. Call 1-800-858-0263. Or go to the Radio Listener Specials page at MyPillow.com. Use promo code Tatum. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You listen to The Officer Tatum Show. I'm your host, Brandon Tatum. Back to the tragedy in Uvalde, Texas. 15 murdered. 14 of the 15 were children at an elementary school in a very small town in Texas. I think about 3 hours from the border, if that. The suspect that was shot and killed at the scene was a Hispanic suspect. So we all know that the news is not going to hold this story very long unless they can find some ground in gun control laws. And I see a lot of people are calling in, and I want to hear from you as well, because I see a bunch of callers have the same sentiment that I have. And, you know, it is very, very interesting at what's going to happen next after all of this has occurred. But you can call in. The number is 844-900-7243, 844-900-7243. Will from Washington, welcome to the Austin Tatum Show.
Brother BT, it's an honor, always an honor to be your show. Okay, check it out. I got a solution, but first I want to premise it. The thing is, I think somebody put that kid up to it, especially that near the border. Okay, there's no evidence of that, but that's just our opinion, okay? So just FYI on that, open mind. Now, here's the solution. We think the parents to parents, okay, parents to peers, we're the parents in this. They have to be accountable, okay? And all due respect to the parents out there, I've been one, all right? So you've been on, everybody, okay? The point is, it's high time we get something in the books that these parents are going to be responsible for this and all of it. Because this kid didn't know anything. He probably got, you know, sidetracked or whatever. The point of the matter is, we're the parents. And all due respect, they all have issue problems. But still, there ain't no excuse. And I'm getting to the point where there's a zero tolerance on any kind of freaking crime in this country. It's high time we open the Constitution and get this thing going around the clock. I'm saying we got to revise and update our Constitution with all this BS going on around us.
Will, thank you for the call. I appreciate your insight. I do think it's high time for parents to be held accountable. But, hey, where do you draw the line? If a kid is 18 years old, they're a grown man, are you still going to hold the parents accountable for the rest of his life? However, I do see what Will is saying out of Washington is that, you know, we do need to hold these parents accountable. You know your kid nutty? You know he crazy? You can look in his eyes and he got the deer in the headlights look. He's a loner, introvert. You know, he don't want to talk to you. All he do is think about death, playing video games all day. You know something ain't right with your kid. Michael from Georgia, welcome to the Officer Tatum Show.
Wonderful show. Wonderful show. Thank you for taking my call. The last caller took my thunder with the parents, but I told your phone screener that I traveled out of the country quite a bit, and leads me to Brazil. And down there, they had an election some years past where they said they didn't want guns. And now the only people who have guns down there are the people who are bad and the police who are never around. And it's not a good situation. And I want answers too. White, black. I grew up in South Florida. I don't see colors. This animal that did this up in Buffalo, and now this guy. This is ridiculous. This is really a time to take up arms against whoever's causing this. If it's the parents, it's the school system. I mean, how does that happen in Buffalo, in New York, for goodness sake? And the irony.
Yo, Michael, thank you for the call. I agree with the sentiment that Michael says is that it's very upsetting because nobody's trying to find solutions. It's all political, right? What political party can use this as leverage to win in the midterms or to win in an election year? It kills me that politicians can't get nothing done. They sit, we put them in Congress and they argue with each other. It can't come to a solution like adults. And y'all are kids bickering with each other. Y'all got to go. You're not in Congress just to sit there and get a fat check and sit around and beat your chest and say, I'm a congressperson from this way. I'm in the House of Representatives. I'm a senator. If y'all are not getting things done and y'all at a deadlock, y'all need to get out there. And people who can actually move the ball forward need to be in Congress, which is the House. Kendra from Texas, welcome to the Austin Tatum Show.
Hello. My daughter was in the school shooting at Santa Fe High School in 2018. She was a survivor. And 10 people lost their lives that day. 13 more were shot and injured. And for you to say that it's rare is just really, it's like somebody punching me in the gut right now. Here I am in Texas. This happened. Our shooting happened in Texas, and now we have another one just a few hours away. So no, I don't agree that it's a rare thing. I think it's becoming, unfortunately, a more common thing. And I feel like at some point, someone in our families, we're all going to know someone who has been touched by this evil. And
Kendra, I don't want to cut you off. I want to make sure I make sure my point is very clear. I understand the pain that you are going through, and I know the experience was personal for you.
I don't think
and,
you do.
And in no way, let me finish. In no way, form, or fashion am I, you know, diminishing what people are going through. When I said that it's rare, I'm speaking of the fact that there's millions of high schools, probably in the state of Texas alone. And when you look at the numbers of how many shootings occur at these high schools based on the number of high schools that exist over a period of time, it's probably less than 1% of a percent that these school shootings are going to happen. But when it's personal, I understand when it's personal to you, it feels as if, and I said this in my opening statement, it feels as if it's not rare and it hits close to home. When I was growing up, I've never experienced a school shooting, and I don't know anybody that was in a school shooting. When I went to school, we never even heard anything like this. I don't think there's ever been a school shooting in the history of Fort Worth ISD where I went to school. So I just want to clarify that. I'll let you finish what you want to say.
It's just the worst thing in the world to send your child to school, and then something you protect your children, and then you put them in these hands, and you're forced to send them to school. Of course, you want to send them to school to get an education, and then something so horrific happens that affects that if they're not dead, then they're mentally scarred for life. Like, it's just a really bad situation. And days after the shooting in Santa Fe, I went to a meeting at the Capitol in Austin with Governor Abbott and all the Texas senators, a roundtable discussion. And there were so many promises made, and so that this would never happen again. And here we are. It's only been 4 years. We just had a 4-year anniversary of our shooting, and here we are again. And I think until they get these schools secured in metal detectors and an officer at every doorway of every entrance of every school in this country. I don't see any other way. And also, I believe that parents do need to be responsible gun owners. I'm all for owning guns, but lock them up. Lock them up. You know,
Kendra, you have so much incredible things to say. I don't want to cut you off after you finish your point. I got a couple more seconds here in the break. You guys are listening to The Officer Tatum Show. I'm your host, Brandon Tatum. Let's continue this conversation because I think a lot of you guys are parents and you have a lot to say on this subject matter. Hold the phone. I'll be back after the break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to The Officer Tatum Show. I'm your host, Brandon Tatum. My next guest that's coming up is an expert. I like to bring on experts because I'm not the smartest man in the world on some of these things, and I want to not just give an opinion about it. I want somebody to know what they're talking about. My next guest is a leading expert in national security and foreign policy challenges and is the vice president of Heritage's Catherine and Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy and is the E.W. Richardson Fellow. This next guest, I'm sure you guys have heard of him before, been on the show before me. And so I want to introduce to you guys James Carafano. Mr. Carafano, welcome to the show.
So is your background law enforcement?
Yes, sir. I was a police officer for about almost 7 years in Tucson.
Well, God bless you for what you do. My dad was a cop. My brother-in-law was a cop, my brother was a cop, and my nephew
wow.
was a cop. So and my mom was a cop.
Wow, wow. So that's a whole
you,
bunch
sir.
Of police in your background, man. That's more than I can say.
Thank you.
For sure.
Thank you for your service. That means a lot. And so just such an honor and privilege to be with you.
Thank you. Mr. Carafano, I have a couple questions for you. I don't know if you'd like me to call you James or Mr. Carafano.
You call me Jim, James, don't call me late for supper, though.
All right, I like to call you James. I want to make it personal, man.
So, right.
I have a couple questions for you because I'm not an expert on foreign policy, and it just doesn't sound right when President Joe Biden goes out and says he's going to defend Taiwan militarily. It seems inconsistent with what we would normally do. Obviously, we would help fund them and their military
right.
action. But I want you to explain it to the audience, because is this a bad thing that President Biden said this, or is he right on track with his comments?
Yeah, it's a great, great question. And, I was in the military for 25 years. And, after that, I've been doing foreign policy, national security, Heritage for almost 20 years and been all over the world, talked to people all over the world, been to Taiwan before. So, here's the reality. This is the cold reality. And this has actually been true since the 1950s, since Dwight Eisenhower was the president of the United States. The reality is the United States would fight to keep China from taking over Taiwan. And here's why. Taiwan is the key island in what's called the first island chain. If the Chinese government controlled everything from Taiwan down to the South China Seas, essentially, they could deny the United States access to the entire Asian continent. You would have no access to South Korea and Japan. You could just write them off. And the Chinese would essentially have a sanctuary where they're, because we couldn't go into those waters, their nuclear missile fleet, their submarine missile fleet would be invulnerable. There's no way we could ever stop them from firing nuclear weapons. We just couldn't kill their submarines because we couldn't get into those waters. So if you actually look at them, at what the islands the Japanese tried to control in World War II, they're exactly the same islands the Chinese are trying to control today for exactly the same reason. Because if they control them, they essentially block the United States out of the Pacific. Now, we have never stated that, publicly, but honestly, that's the reality that both we know and the Chinese know. Now, here's what the law states, which is that under the Taiwan Relations Act, by law, we are obligated to provide Taiwan the means to help it defend itself. That's what the act says. Now, Here's the problem with what Biden said. First of all, we should be very clear. The Chinese could care less what Joe Biden says. The Chinese look at what we do, not what we say, right? And so the problem with what Joe Biden said is, first of all, he said, well, we're going to defend Taiwan. Well, the Chinese say, oh, that's interesting, because they look at our defense policies and they look at our investments in defense and our basing, and they say, the United States is systematically, under both Obama and Biden, decreased the amount of force that we actually have in the region relative to what the Chinese are. So if you remember the famous line from Top Gun, it's like, son, your body's writing checks you can't cash or whatever. But Biden is saying, well, sure, we'll defend Taiwan. When the Chinese look at the correlation of forces, and increasingly they say the United States is not actually trying to defend Taiwan. So that actually makes us look feckless. So that's stupid one. Stupid two is, as soon as Biden says this, the White House comes out and contradicts him. So it makes, like, we don't know what the hell we're talking about. So it actually makes us look like the laughingstock to the Chinese. And this is three times this has happened, where Biden says, we will defend Taiwan, and his actual White House said, no, that's not correct. So that's ridiculous. And then the third stupid thing is, and I like to contrast with Donald Trump, who in many ways, despite that he didn't have Joe Biden's 40 years in the Senate, was infinitely more sophisticated in how he understood foreign policy. In foreign policy, you don't do or say things unless they're setting up the next move. Like, it's just like chess. So, for example, when Trump moved the embassy, the U.S. embassy in Israel to Jerusalem, I was the first person to say, like, what the heck he's doing that? No president's ever done that. Why would he do that? But Trump actually had a plan. He did that, and then he recognized the Golan Heights because he had a very specific strategy. He was doing these things to demonstrate to the Arab states that they could normalize relations with Israel and everything would be fine. So he did things purposely. Biden doesn't have a purpose here. He's saying something. And the next day he's doing nothing. So it's the antithesis of good strategy. So what I said was, look, I'm just being honest with the American people. Will the United States, in its own self-interest, fight to defend Taiwan? And the answer is yes. Just like, not because we love the Taiwanese or because we like chips. We obviously like getting their silicon chips, and we love that they have a democracy and everything else. But the reality is we will fight to defend Taiwan because letting the Chinese take it over would put American citizens and their interests at grave risk. That's why we would do that. But this administration is literally the dumpster fire of foreign policy and the way they handle these things. Donald Trump implicitly understood this thing way better than Biden. And, you know, and the reason why is, you know, people say, well, why do you say Trump was better at foreign policy? And it's really simple. Two reasons. One is Donald Trump grew up in the age of Ronald Reagan. And he looked at Ronald Reagan as a model president in the belief that peace through strength, if you demonstrate to your enemies that you're willing to protect things that are important to you, you will force them to respect you on that. And that was Donald Trump's way of doing things. The other thing is, when Trump was faced with an issue, the first thing he'd always say is, what's in the best interest of the American people? And he would do that. What Biden does is, we're never quite sure. It's usually about politics, and sometimes it's just about, you know, I don't know what old people get. You know, it's kind of slippy brain stuff. But you do not get a sense with Joe Biden that this is a president that is really acting as the commander in chief.
Yeah, I agree with you 1,000%. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to James Carafano, a leading expert in national security and foreign policy. That makes a lot more sense to me after you've explained it, because you see one side says that Joe Biden made the right decision. Newt Gingrich came out and said that was a great statement by Joe Biden and the White House shouldn't have walked it back. And then there's people on the other side that says Joe Biden is a complete idiot for saying the things that he said, because he does look weak and feckless. And it's like, you know, writing a check that you can't cash, if you know what I'm saying. And exactly. And I think that's an excellent synopsis. You know, I want to know another thing about, you know, what President Trump is doing. I mean, not President Trump, but President Joe Biden. And we just have a short period of time here to finish out this segment. But is Biden himself being as lackadaisical, as degenerate in his mind, his weak, feckless look, is that hurting the United States and our national security?
Absolutely. Look, first of all, people shouldn't be surprised that Biden runs foreign policy exactly like Obama ran foreign policy, for a very simple reason. that the same people that are in his administration are exactly the same people of the Obama administration. And the last thing they believed in was peace, restraint. And they actually looked at foreign policy really as an extension of domestic policy. The only foreign policy stuff they cared about was stuff that reinforced domestic policy. So they love talking about climate change and gender policies, but they have no use for the real hard things about protecting us in the world. And it is a disaster. And to be honest, is, you know, people can believe what they would take whatever thoughts they want about the war in Ukraine. But the reality is 40 million people were attacked and half their GDP was destroyed because the Russians believe that Joe Biden was asleep at the wheel in feckless.
James, I got to bring you back in the second or the next segment. Is that okay? I hope I can bring you back in. You guys are listening to James Carafano, an expert in national security and foreign policy, talking about Joe Biden. See you after the break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I got a special guest. If you live in California and you're worried about the water crisis and the drought, if you're sick of the politics in California, and if you voted for Gavin Newsom, you should be ashamed of yourself. But I have a guest here that's an expert, wrote a book called Winning the Water Wars. California can meet its water needs by promoting abundance rather than managing scarcity. Welcome to the show, Stephen Greenhunt.
Yes, thanks for having me here.
My pleasure, Stephen. I need you to walk us through this whole thing. You know, what is going on in California with this drought? I mean, I feel like California is mismanaging water more so than the desert that I live in Arizona. What do the people of California need to know about these restrictions that Gavin Newsom is going to put on the water in California?
Yeah, so one of the things, and we're being told to conserve, and there's nothing wrong with conservation, obviously, and when there's not enough water, we have to conserve. But in your state of Arizona, the Arizonans use less water overall, not per capita, just overall less water than they did in 1959 when the population was 1/7 its size. Californians have also been cutting back water use over the years. Our per capita water use is way below what it used to be. So people are conserving and have been conserving, and appliances keep getting more efficient. The problem is not that people aren't conserving. It's not that we use too much water for our swimming pools. I don't have a swimming pool, but people who do, that's, you know, that's less than 3% of the whole water of the state. 50% of the California's water flows out to the Pacific Ocean for environmental purposes. 40% goes to ag, and 10% is the remaining, you know, urban, governmental, industrial uses. 5.7% of the total are homes. So I don't know. I'm a journalist, not a math person. But if you try to keep squeezing more out of that 5.7%, you can see that maybe it's diminishing returns. The problem is that the state isn't planning ahead and hasn't been planning ahead. We had a very severe drought a few years ago, and the state really has. And then we had a lot of rainy years, and California state officials haven't done anything in that period when they could have move forward. So one good example is there was a desalination plant proposed in Huntington Beach in Orange County on a site of an old industrial site. And it's almost identical to the plant in Carlsbad, which is just down the road in down the coastline in San Diego. The latter plant, it meets about, San Diego is 3.3 million people, the county. It meets about 9-10% of that county's needs. This plant would have met up to 16% of Orange County's needs, three plus million population county. Those are real amounts of water. The Coastal Commission unanimously rejected it. Gavin Newsom he supported it, but all his nominees to the Coastal Commission voted against it. So these are the kind of, that's a privately funded project, so we reject that. Sites Reservoir has been on the, up in Colusa County, it's been up in on the drawing board for decades, and we still haven't built it. We haven't expanded our dams. We haven't saved more water during rainy years. So we're always stuck in this world of rationing.
Stephen, and you guys are listening to Stephen Greenhunt. He wrote a book about this whole incident or the situation in California, winning the water wars, and you wrote that book in 2020. What is the future for Californians? You know, if Gavin Newsom continues the way he's going, these Democrats are still running the government in California, is there going to be a significant drought in California that the Californians should be worried about? Or is it the government is incompetent and we will resolve this as a people in California? You know, where do we stand with this?
Well, it's hard to know where it's going to go. I mean, what we're doing, though, is our state officials, through inaction, are putting us at the mercy of Mother Nature, right? So if we get some rainy years, we'll be fine. And if the drought becomes intense, and the state has had, you know, droughts and floods and droughts and floods throughout its entire history. You know, when Leland Stanford went to be inaugurated, he had to take a boat to the Capitol. We've had massive floods before. You know, before we dammed all the rivers, there were massive flood events, and we've always had drought event, a lot long standing drought. So it's really just largely an infrastructure issue, and we have, the state has a $97.5 billion budget surplus, which is, you know, that's pretty unbelievable, which certainly just means the government's collecting more money from people. It's taking too much money. but it's certainly, if you look at this in context, you know, if we used a lot of that, some of that money towards building some of these infrastructure projects, we could solve it, because you store more water in the rainy years, so you have it in the dry years. I mean, there's a reason Southern California gets a third of the state's rainfall, and it's in better shape than the Northern California, which gets, you know, two thirds of the rainfall, because Southern California, the Metropolitan Water District and the water district in San Diego have built more storage facilities than they planned ahead. Now, there are some things that everyone likes, like Orange County is the master of water recycling, and that's a good thing. There are a lot of things like that we can do. I advocate doing all sorts of things. You know, we store more water, build desal, recycle water, conserve, do everything. But we're losing. California's been overdrawing from the Colorado River, so we're having to pull back. So we're looking at a future of scarcity. And if the state, you know, that's just going to mean higher prices, rationing. It's going to be bad for poor people, for everyone. It's going to be bad for business development. Fewer people are going to want to come here.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, you listen to Stephen Greenhunt. He's the author of Winning the Water Wars. I have a couple more questions about California, because I know that you're an expert on this water crisis, but I know that you know a lot more. Are you based in California?
Yeah, I'm near Sacramento.
Sacramento. My wife was raised in California. She lived in L.A. when we got married. And there's this train, this transit system, or to nowhere.
The bullet train
that never existed. I still see the pillars and stuff that they built, and it's going nowhere. What happened in it? Do you have any insight on, was that a fraudulent scheme that the government put into place, the California government put into place, where a bunch of people made money and the American people were scammed, or at least the Californians were scammed?
No, I mean, it started at the Schwarzenegger administration, and there was a referendum that was put before voters to Proposition 1A that allocated $9.95 billion for the initial starter segment of this high-speed rail that was going to go from L.A. to the Bay Area. But it, like all government projects, I mean, sure, it got a life of its own, and it didn't make a lot of sense, right? So there's a privately proposed, or mostly privately proposed, high-speed rail that would go from like Rancho Cucamonga, you know, the Inland Empire to Las Vegas. Now, that makes some sense. A lot of people want to leave L.A. and go to Vegas for the weekend, and it's, you know, it's a private project, so it has to pencil out. Well, this is the government-designed project. And part of the problem, though, was in the language of the initiative, that they promised, the advocates for the high-speed rail promised quite a few things, X amount of private investment, travel times, costs, all this sort of stuff. And the plans that have come out after that don't meet any of those, don't meet most of those standards. So it's going to take longer than promised. It hasn't gotten private investment to make it work. The rail authority is going to share lines, Caltrain lines in the Bay Area, which are commuter lines. So how do you have a high-speed rail line that has to share commuter lines? And you know, it's ridiculous. I mean, I already have high-speed rail. I get Southwest Airlines from Sacramento to L.A. It takes 55 minutes and doesn't cost a lot of money. So it's an unnecessary thing. So and they haven't totally figured out how to get through the Tehachapi Mountains to the L.A. Basin. So what, right now we're looking at a starter segment. The costs, of course, are escalating. It's going to be over $100 billion, and that means that's probably going to be much more than that. So going from Merced to Bakersfield, both perfectly nice little Central Valley cities, but nobody's going to take the high-speed rail from Merced to Bakersfield. It's just a boondoggle.
Stephen, we're getting ready to go into the break. I would love to have you for one more segment to talk about California. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Stephen Greenhunt, the author of Winning the Water Wars. You're listening to the Austin Tatum Show. Catch us after the break.
Brandon Tatum, the left ain't seen nothing yet.
All day I face the barren waste without the taste of water.
Brandon Tatum, unafraid to tell it like it is.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm talking to Stephen Greenhunt. He's an expert at this water crisis. I mean, he's an expert in many categories, but one thing that he does very well is break down the water crisis in California. He also wrote a book in 2020, Winning the Water Wars. Y'all make sure y'all go check that book out. Stephen, I had a question for you in the break. Well, I came up with a question while I was in the break. I'm probably going to say this wrong. Matter of fact, I'm not going to waste my time saying it. I think you know exactly what I'm talking about. The concept of converting ocean water into usable water, desalination.
Desalination.
Desalination. There you go. Desalination. Okay.
Yeah.
So what is your thoughts on desalination? I mean, is this something that California can do? Is this something that makes sense? You know, from in the break, we were talking about how there's another country that does a really good job at Jerusalem, or I don't know what country I'm talking about. What country is it?
Yeah. Well, Israel's fixed its existential Israel. Water crisis, through desalination. In fact, the Six-Day War was actually fought over diversions from the Jordan River. So there, when they talk about water wars in California, it's metaphorical. In Israel, it's an actual fighting war. There actually was a war over the Colorado River. The Arizona state senator fielded her own navy. It was kind of a joke, but that actually happened. But as far as desalination, that, as I mentioned in the last segment, there was a proposal, a privately funded proposal, to build a desal plant in Huntington Beach, right on the coast at an old energy plant. And the California Coastal Commission killed it because of concerns over plankton and sea level rise. It's absolutely absurd. I mean, you know, a little bit of plankton being taken in, floating whale food and the ocean the size of the Pacific, it's totally absurd. But the Coastal Commission is extremely anti-growth. And although Gavin Newsom did speak out in favor of the plant, his commissioners voted against it. So, it was all talk. But desalinated water is more costly than imported water. But the cost of it is going down in comparison to imported water, which is becoming scarcer and scarcer, and the price is going up. And also taxpayers have funded a great deal of projects, you know, for that imported water, the dams and reservoirs that are hidden in the cost. So I think it's a pretty good deal. And I'd rather pay more for something that we have than pay less for something that you don't have, right? So okay, it costs more, but we don't have any water. So I think it's a really good idea. The environmentalists have been fighting it. And there's a plant in San Diego County that's very successful. But the environmentalists stopped the one in Orange County, and they're fighting against the one in Marina, a town near Monterey. So, it in Israel, though, they solved their entire water problem with desalinated water.
That is interesting. It seems like there's a common theme, Stephen, that the government and these conservationists and these individuals who are out of control, in my opinion, are causing so many of these problems, or there's fixes that could be had, but they're thwarting them, just like the fires. Now, I'm not from California, but my wife tells me this all the time, is that if they would just deal with the brush and, you know, kind of clean these forests, then we wouldn't have all of these fires that we see. They're not using resources and cleaning the forest, you know, cutting down some of these trees in certain situations. They are just allowing this stuff to just build up, and these brush fires are causing extreme damage. Is that an accurate statement, or am I off?
Oh, yeah. No, you're completely right. In fact, in your state of Arizona, Governor Ducey, he signed a bill that allowed, you know how we have inmates in California who provide firefighting services? He signed a bill that allows them to provide brush clearance efforts, and that wouldn't be a bad idea here. And you know, our governor Newsom had boasted about all the brush clearance he had done, but it turned out he actually reduced the amount of spending on that. And you know, I think it was NPR that did a report about how his boasts about what he's been doing on that fall quite far short of what he's actually been doing. But the problem, I think, is we have an aggressive environmental community, and we're all, you know, environmentalists. We want the environment to you know, be healthy. But they have a kind of an ideological and aggressive environmental community that sees conservation as the be-all and end-all. They don't like, you know, they don't like our suburban lifestyles, the swimming pools. They just want us to conserve and punish us. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but I think there's this effort to kind of punish us for our lifestyles rather than try to, you know, try to build the infrastructure needed to help us, you know, live the lives that we want to live. And so it's a philosophical difference. And if you read, you know, Cadillac Desert and some of the, you know, classic books in California water that have a strong environmental tilt to them, you'll find those themes, you know, running through it. And you see it in other areas too, like on, you know, freeway construction. California doesn't do freeway construction anymore. And up until recently, the population was growing. And so we just become ever more congested as our state's leaders push us to take bicycles and transit and light rail, but people still prefer to drive. So we just keep getting more and more congested. It's a common theme in California.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Stephen Greenhunt. Wrote a book about the subject matter that we originally were talking about, the water crisis in California. Wrote a book called Winning the Water Wars. I think that's a central theme. It's weird that we cannot get people in the public office that make these decisions that will do us right for the people, or at least have enough cognitive ability to say, maybe this is not what my party likes, but this is what will make us better. Maybe we should come to the table and let's have a discussion amongst many different people to come to a solution to the problem. Because I went to California, and the first time I experienced a tremendous amount of traffic, and I thought the traffic was bad on a Sunday night. I drove in on a Sunday night, and it was 11 o'clock at night, and it was traffic everywhere. And I said, "Where in the world am I? I don't see traffic like this anywhere else in the country, at least the places that I've been." And so, you know, I just find it very interesting that states like California push these policies that really force people into, you know, negative situations. You know, the homeless is out of control because of their policies. The fires are out of control because of their policies. I have 1 minute. Stephen, I want you to let the audience know where they can find the material that you produce, where they can find you at if you do things on social media, and also where they can purchase your book.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. Winning the Water Wars, and I have three other California books that you can get on Amazon. And I work for the R Street Institute. We're a free market think tank, so it's rstreet.org. And I also am on the editorial board. I write a column for the Orange County Register, so ocregister.com. And I write an American Spectator column. You can find me in Reason. So just check out those websites. So thanks for letting me pitch them. I appreciate it.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, Stephen Greenhunt, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate you, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to The Officer Tatum Show. We're going to get to your callers in the next segment. I love you guys. Be safe out there. Catch you after the break.
Brandon Tatum, the left ain't seen nothing yet.
Welcome back to the Officer Tatum Show. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Liddell and MyPillow are having a buy one, get one extravaganza on multiple MyPillow products. Now is the time to join millions of Americans who have changed the quality of their sleep with MyPillow. Right now, get buy one, get one free pricing on MyPillow bed sheets, which is what I have. Giza Elegance MyPillows, which is also what I have. Six-piece towel sets, roll and go anywhere MyPillows. Just go to the radio listener specials page at MyPillow.com and use promo code Tatum or call 1-800-858-0263. Do not miss out on this incredible opportunity. Buy one, get one free on select products. And you'll also get Mike Lindell's book with any of your purchases, with select purchases. Call 800-858-0263 or go to radio listener specials page at MyPillow.com and put a discount code Tatum. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to finish this night strong. I can't stand these Democrats. I cannot stand these leftists. I cannot stand Joe Biden. You've been in office for 40 freaking years, and you've done nothing. You were a senator. You were the vice president, and now you're the president, and you're still talking to us about what can be done to fix this issue. You have done absolutely nothing. Ladies and gentlemen, the leading cause of death in the United States of America is heart disease. Next is cancer. I'm not going to even count COVID because I feel like they didn't make that up and added numbers to it. Accidents, unintentional injuries, stroke, chronic lower respiratory infection, Alzheimer's disease, diabetes, influenza, pneumonia, shooting people. It's not a leading cause of death. Most gun deaths are suicides. There are more people that have died from knives, blunt force trauma with hands and feet than have died at the hands of an AR-15. Don't let these crooked politicians lie to you. It is not occurring the way they say it is. Today was a tragedy. Everybody that's listening would wish that this did not happen. The solution is not gun laws. That idiot with a gun, would have had a gun, whether he got it illegally or legally, he would have had a gun and had intentions to kill people. And I don't think that that was his, I don't know if that was his objective, was to go into that school and kill people. He had killed his grandma. He was fleeing from police. He crashed his vehicle and he got out and shot up the school that was close to him. And I can't say whether or not that was his plan or whether he was going crazy. But what I can tell you is that these gun law talk and these lobbyists that are fighting against gun laws is stupid. That's not occurring in this country. We have a right to keep and bear arms. The government want to take your guns so they can do us like they did the people in Australia. That's not going to happen in the United States of America. What needs to happen is we need to arm the teachers. We need to have armed security at the schools to protect our kids. There's no need for us to take the guns away from law-abiding citizens who are doing what's right by guns. My gun ain't never going to jump out that safe or jump off my dresser and kill nobody. And neither would none of the guns that are owned by the people that are listening to this radio show. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. Ladies and gentlemen, I got to get up out of here, and I got to see y'all tomorrow. So make sure you come back to the show. You're listening to The Officer Tatum Show. I'm your host, Brandon Tatum. Hold the phone. See you tomorrow.
Brandon Tatum, unafraid to tell it like it is.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.